We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
I think this is the time where I say, worst draft ever, at least as far as transactions. Welcome everyone to Chat with a Cat. This is episode 18. This is taking place just following the 1983 rookie draft between seasons 3 and 4. And it's that time where the cat goes reacting to the draft. In past off seasons, we've had a lot of trade activity at the draft, and this year there were only two trades of consequence. There were a couple of other minor ones, I guess. And for the most part, the draft played out as the lotto order had, so there weren't a ton of surprises. I have my theories as to why, and we'll get into those as we go through breaking down what happened in the draft. But let's start at the beginning. In the draft lotto, there wasn't a ton of surprises. For the most part, the lotto went chalk. There were a few coin flips of teams that had tied with the same record where they flip-flop positions in terms of who had, you know, let's say pick 7 and 8 or pick 9 and 10. And those you expect, but in terms of big jumps, nobody jumped. And I saw on the Discord chat that somebody commented that tankers got rewarded. I think the only team that tanked their way into a top 3 pick, at least in my opinion, would be the Nuggets. The Nuggets blew things up dramatically about Sim 4 last season. The Nets had kind of stayed with the team that they had since they won the title, so I don't know if you can say they're tanking. The Hawks have new ownership. They were getting their feet under them. They didn't want to really rock the boat, and so they had a team that was underperforming, and it underperformed again. So I don't know that you can call that tanking. I guess you could say the Bulls tanked, but we'll talk about that. But anyway, not a lot of drama surrounding the lottery. Everything more or less went chalk. So we saw the draft class from last year. I think everybody has been eyeing Clyde Drexler and Dale Ellis. I did kind of a draft preview last year, so you can refer to that for how I think these players will actually pan out. What I want to do today is look at essentially what the state of the league is as we head into free agency. I think there are some interesting things to note. So I'm going to cover draft first, and then I'll get a little bit into free agency. This is more general trends. I'm not going to be looking at specific free agents, and we'll get to that when we get to it. But anyway, with the first pick of the draft, the Nuggets picked, to no one's great surprise, Clyde Drexler. He comes to a Nuggets squad that is, bereft of talent, because they have a ton of interesting pieces that they picked up when they traded guys away last year. But as I look at Drexler, if you think he's going to be the alpha on this squad right away, you're probably wrong. Greg Kite has a lower inside shooting score than Drexler does, but Drexler's inside shooting is only 27. They've got several players that are in the 40s and 50s, so Clyde is not likely to catch them this year without training, which means at least for his rookie season, Clyde is not going to tear the league up. He's not going to be a huge scorer. He's going to be one of the guys. And given the extended losing streak this team finished on last season, I don't know that that's going to be enough to elevate them much. This goes into something that I think I've touched on before, but I'll say it explicitly. It's much easier to tear down a team and tank and pile up losses than it is to improve a team and pile up wins. And I think a lot of the teams that decided to tear everything down are going to be dealing with that. Now, the Nuggets have a pretty full roster, if not necessarily the most talented. You've got a lot of green players. But as I said, this is a squad that, by and large, in its current form, lost, like, what was it, 40 games in a row or something last season? They're not good. Last season, their number one option was Louis Orr by the end of the season, who averaged 15.8 points a game for the season. So that kind of tells you where the Nuggets are. I don't think Clyde's going to win the Rookie of the Year. I don't think he's going to stand out, but I also don't think he's going anywhere. I suspect that the Nuggets ownership is going to be patient, and they won't mind sucking one more year because they're going to have another crack at some superstars in this draft class. The only caveat for the Nuggets in doing that is they don't own their own draft pick. So I do think they're going to try to use the draft picks that they do own, which are the Trailblazers, Kings, and Bullets, all of which I think are probably top five teams, assuming free agency goes as I expect it to go, which is generally teams bring their guys back. So a massive free agent defection could change that, but at least last season, these were three of the top five teams. So Nuggets don't have a ton to work with there, and I think they will be incented, kind of like the Celtics were last season, to actually make a decent effort unless they can get their own pick back. I just don't see them having enough talent to do so. So Clyde, I mean, if I'm guessing, maybe he averages 15. This looks like a team where you got a bunch of guys averaging 12 to 15 points a game, no real stars. You know, Clyde is going to be a star someday, but he's not there now. And even with training camp, I don't think he's going to get there. So let's go to the number two pick. This is a team that's a little more incomplete in the form of the Nets. The Nets are interesting to me because we didn't get to see, I think, their full potential with the fat lever leg injury last season. One presumes he's not going to have the bad luck of having another one this season. And so you'll have Lever and Dale Ellis next to each other. Lever is going to continue to improve his skill set. So even if he doesn't have the ceiling he once had, he's going to be pretty good, I think. The big question to me is if the Nets kind of come back in the same form they were last year, and that would include free agent signings, or I guess re-signings, if I'm being accurate, of Daryl Dawkins and who's their point guard? Is it Larry Drew? Yeah, Larry Drew. So Daryl Dawkins and Larry Drew come back, and they have a talented team on paper, but it's pretty much the same team that has underperformed since winning a title 2 years ago. I think the Herb Williams pickup a couple of years ago kind of makes me scratch my head. I thought he would be better than he was. He kind of regressed last season. His scoring average stayed flat, but his shooting and blocks went way down. So I kind of wonder what's going on with Herb. I think, you know, Daryl Dawkins and Cliff Robinson will probably get the majority of the shots. Dale Ellis will have the luxury of not being called upon to try to lead this team, and maybe he's the piece that gets the Nets back into contention. But I don't know. The fit with the Nets has just been weird. It also seems like they've been bitten by the injury bug. And so maybe it's just a matter of them staying healthy. But again, I don't see the opportunity for Dale Ellis to go off. I think Daryl Dawkins and Cliff Robinson are going to be the primary offensive centerpieces of this team, at least for the current season. And so do I think Dale Ellis has a Rookie of the Year run in him? I don't. honestly. Next up, we flip over to the number three pick that went to the Hawks. They picked up Derek Harper with the number three pick. As I mentioned in my preview, Harper is extremely, extremely raw. The Hawks, if I'm looking at them, look like they're going to be offensively challenged this year when your two best scoring options are Jeff Ruland and Clark Kellogg. That's not a great sign. I think the Hawks, you know, sitting on their own draft pick, will be content to suck again this year and add another piece. The question for the Hawks is going to be, okay, you know, when do we start pulling it together and start trying to win? I suspect that's after next season. They don't have their first in 85. So I think this is a year they're trying to lay low, accumulate some more pieces, get another star in the draft. I just wonder if their current roster players, I mean, I mentioned Harper is probably 3-4 seasons away from being the player he's going to become. Ruland doesn't seem like he's a superstar. He seems like his ceiling is kind of, you know, mid-starter at best. Craig Elo, super raw, 3-4 seasons away. I just worry if I'm the Hawks that, you know, I guess maybe the syndicate's going to be patient and do a slow build, but I don't think the Hawks are a team that's going to scare anyone this year, and at least as presently constituted. At pick number four, we had what I would consider the blockbuster trade of the draft, and that was where the Celtics sent their 1985 first, LaSalle Thompson, Mark Eaton, Mo Cheeks, and George Gervin to the Bulls. So basically the entire playoff roster from last season, less Dr. J, goes to Chicago, and this lets the Celtics really, really reset. You know, Dr. J is, of course, still on the roster, but he's in his 30s, and he's not going to be the leader of this team for very long. With the number four pick, the Celtics brought in Ralph Sampson. Ralph, I think, has a good chance to put up great stats. The only other real scorer on his team is Dr. J, and I suspect the Celtics will be incented to let the good doctor take a step back, maybe bring him off the bench as a steadying veteran presence. That gives them Ralph and nobody else who wants the ball, so I think Ralph is going to get as many shots as he wants. I don't think that leads to a lot of winning for the Celtics. But the Celtics don't care. They're in the middle of a full burn it down and reset. And so I think, again, you know, good for Ralph Sampson. He probably gets as many shots as he wants. I can see him averaging 20. I don't think he'll average more than that just because he doesn't have a lot of threats around him. I mean, he could go 21, but he's not going to be a 30-point-a-game scorer. Doesn't have enough threats around him, doesn't have enough help, and that team is going to get annihilated on the glass, and they're going to have a hard time hanging on to the ball. So at least for my money, Ralph Sampson is the bright spot on the Celtics this year, but it's going to be a bad season, and I don't think the Celtics care because they have their own pick. Next up was the number five pick that went to the Spurs. They collected Byron Scott to add to their stable of offensive, I don't want to say little men, but offensive little men. You know, Mark Aguirre, Eddie Johnson, Byron Scott, Isaiah Thomas, all of these guys are a little bit small, but all great scorers. So the Spurs are still where they've been since trading away Kevin McHale, which is looking for a high-grade inside threat. They did pick up Mark West in the draft. I liked West as a defensive player. I don't think he's going to be a great offensive player. I do think he'll be reasonably efficient, but I'm thinking he's a guy that's going to get you, you know, 8 points on 55% shooting, let's say. Aguirre and Johnson and Scott and Thomas are going to be the guys that are scoring. Again, trying to handicap the rookie of the year race. I think in another situation, Byron might have had the ability to go for rookie of the year, but Aguirre's going to eat first, Isaiah's going to eat second, Eddie Johnson's going to eat third, so Byron is not going to get the shots that Ralph Sampson is going to get, and so there's just not a way for him to get, you know, what he wants. Do the Spurs markedly improve this year? I don't think so. Mostly my concern is around the defense. You know, Byron is a pretty good defender, and that's it. So it's a team that's going to have a hard time stopping people. It kind of reminds me of the old 80s Nuggets teams that scored 145 and gave up 150. So I think that's what we're going to see out of the Spurs. Staying in the Midwest, the Mavericks had pick number 6, and they picked up Doc Rivers. And I think I mentioned in my rookie preview that Doc looked like one of the more polished players. I don't think his ceiling is as high as some of the others. On this team, I could see Doc challenging for Rookie of the Year just because Bill Laimbeer has not been a particularly dominant offensive force. Jay Vincent takes a lot of shots, but I don't know that the Mavericks are inclined to give him a ton of minutes. He's only averaged about 30 minutes a game for his career. And if his field goal percentage was better, you could see him being forced a little bit. I think he kind of plays as an undersized power forward, and undersized usually means poor shooting. Maybe the addition of Rivers at point guard will help with that. Maybe it won't. But you know, I think Rivers has an outside chance at Rookie of the Year, even if I don't think long-term he's as good as some of the other players that we've seen. Just because the Mavericks, you know, like many of these teams, you know, ripped their team to the ground trying to get a high draft pick. And I don't really know, you know, what that does in terms of setting you up for future success. Maybe it sets up your rookies for Rookie of the Year. I don't know. Anyway, pick number 7, we had another trade. Dennis Johnson finally came off the Hawks. The Hawks pulled the trigger and did something to shake themselves up. They moved Clark Kellogg to the Pistons along with they got Clark Kellogg from the Pistons along with the number 7 pick and moved Paul Pressey, DJ, and their 85 first. So, you know, here the pick went to the Hawks, and it was Craig Elo. And I mentioned when I discussed the Hawks at 3, Elo is very raw. I like his upside 3-4 years from now, but he's not really ready to play yet. This is actually probably a good time to look at the Pistons and the Bulls, the teams that were on the other sides of those trades, because essentially what the Pistons did was they drafted Dennis Johnson and Paul Pressey with that pick. And I'm a little sanguine, perhaps, on DJ, mostly because of his age, also because he has really high ball handling and passing potentials, but he's already 28 and he still hasn't come anywhere near those potentials, so I don't think he's ever going to get there. And at least to me, he projects as a high usage shooting guard that eats up a lot of minutes and gives you some good quality. The problem is he's on the expiring year of his deal. He'll probably command a maximum contract next season. And then the question I would have, at least if I was Detroit, is do I want to tie myself to Dennis Johnson next to Terry Cummings? You know, they've got a good thing around Cummings. I think Paul Pressey is a really nice fit alongside Cummings. You know, Pressey has the ball handling skills, at least the potentials, almost equal to most point guards. And so I think once he grows into those, he gives you a steady, reliable option that doesn't turn the ball over. I think he's more suited to shooting guard due to size than he is for small forward, where he played last season. Last year with the Hawks, he averaged 11.5 points in 27 minutes a game. I think that ticks up this year. Is he ready to be the number 3 behind Cummings and TJ? I don't think so, but I think Pressey is a solid rotation player. You're not going to feel bad having him as your 4th or 5th guy, and at least, you know, right now he may be a little overused as a 3rd option, but once the Pistons get a little more talent on the floor, I think they'll be okay. Similarly, and I guess we stay in the Central here as we look at the Bulls. the Bulls essentially used the third pick to draft Mark Eaton, LaSalle Thompson, George Gervin, and Maurice Cheeks. And I do like that for them. Obviously, it gives them a playoff-ready group. They can plug in Steve Johnson, who now gets some help up front and has been kind of their stalwart. And, you know, Craig Hodges will get the chance to play off ball a little bit. I don't know that the Bulls are ready to be a contending team, but I think they at least should threaten teams to make the playoffs. You know, again, just based on, you know, they have essentially the Celtics team that made the playoffs last year without Dr. J, but adding in Steve Johnson, Kenny Higgs, and Craig Hodges, I think that's probably enough to get them, or get that core, I guess, back to the playoffs. It's not going to be the Bulls back to the playoffs per se. Next up was the Bucks, who picked up Jeff Malone at number 8 after a finals run. Following a teardown last year, the Bucks really got a nice shot in the arm, potentially with Malone. He's a ready-made scorer, but I don't know how well he fits the Bucks' plan, which is defense, 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 because that is not at all what Jeff Malone is about. Maybe they intend to use him as a change-of-pace guy off the bench. You know, the other thing with the Bucks is, you know, obviously you've got McHale is a scorer, Sleepy Floyd can be a scorer. Last season they stifled teams with defense. They really didn't have a huge score. I think if Doug feels like he can get enough defense from his other four spots and he starts Malone, I think there's a possibility Malone could garner some Rookie of the Year votes. He has the potential to put up 20 points a game. He'll probably put up like one rebound and one assist. But he could go for 20 points a game if given the minutes. So we'll be very interested to see what Doug does with that. Again, I didn't like the fit because the Bucks were really constructed as a defensive squad, and that is not what Malone is. So is Doug pivoting again? I kind of doubt it. I suspect he's probably going to try to inflate Malone's numbers and then try to pass him off to somebody else for a player he really wants. That's what I'd do anyway. Next up was the 76ers. They picked Sadale Threet. There was a lot of slander, I guess, or libel around Sadale Threet. He is not good right now, obviously. He's an orange-blue. He has very good potentials. It's going to be a while till he gets there. The question is, does Gary want to put in the time to develop him? Is Gary paying attention? More importantly, if Gary brings back Norm Nixon, who was probably his best player, does that let Sadale, I don't want to say rot on the bench, but develop on the bench, bake on the bench, cook on the bench, I don't know what you want to call that, but mature on the bench, I guess, so that he doesn't have to play right away. And maybe, you know, in three seasons when it's time to bring Sadale into the limelight, he's a beast defensively. I mean, he has great defensive potentials, but he's going to need a couple of years to get there. The 76ers challenged for a playoff berth last season. They eventually wound up falling a little bit short. I think they could do that again this season, but it's going to require a fruitful free agency. The free agency doesn't go well. I think the 76ers are going to be back in not even mediocrity, in misery. So we'll see how it goes. I don't hold out high hopes for the team, unfortunately. Next up was the Rockets. They drafted Roy Hinson with the number 10 pick. It's an interesting pick. And this is the second time 78 has kind of thrown a curveball at us. The first time was with Frank Johnson, the second now being with Roy Hinson. I don't think anybody had Roy at the very top of their list once we got out of the blue potential players, but I can see it. He's a freak athlete. He's a great shot blocker, pretty good rebounder, and assuming they bring back Otis Birdsong, you know, Larry Bird, Ricky Pierce, Birdsong, and Johnson can fill the basket up. They don't need Hinson to be a huge scorer, They just need him to be efficient. If he's a guy that's called upon for, stand in the dunker spot, take some dunks, get some rebounds, block some shots, give rim protection, I can see him doing that. 6'9 seems to be about the low end of centers being effective, and I guess playing to their ratings. You can play shorter guys there, but it seems to have an effect on them. So maybe they drafted Hinson thinking of him as a center. It's hard to tell. But I guess we'll see what 78 has in mind. This is another one of those picks where 78 seems to be zigging while everyone else is zagging, and he's either going to be shown to be brilliant or fantastically misguided. At pick number 11 was the Jazz. They picked Randy Breuer. I kind of was corresponding with Exist around the time he made this pick. I thought there were about three or four players that are all roughly the same around that point. Roy Hinson was one of them. Randy Breuer is another one. Randy is another guy who's defender, shot blocker, not so much on the offensive end. But, the Jazz don't necessarily need that. They've got Kiki. They've got Chambers. They have their primary offensive guns, and they can afford to let Breuer kind of be the defensive specialist that they need. I do think they'll probably have to put some points into training him up if they want him to be good sooner rather than later, particularly in the post-defense area. Excuse me, but with options like Chambers and Kiki as your 1 and 2, there's really no reason to worry about his offensive side. And I think giving them the defensive balance makes him a pretty good pickup, especially considering what was on the board. At number 12, the Trailblazers picked Thurl Bailey. He is a little less solid defensively, has some decent offensive potential, but is still very raw. He's a project. Assuming the Blazers are able to re-sign their free agent front court, I don't see him getting a ton of playing time this season. And as I've talked about before, I have no problem with parking a rookie on the bench for a year or two to let him bake and not throw him immediately into the fire. And I think once you're outside the lottery, that's probably about the best you can hope for. You hope to pick up a guy that can turn into a contributor, but probably isn't a contributor right away, no matter how much you try to force feed him. At number 13, the Sonics picked up Steve Stepanović. Steve was a little more defensive-minded, while Bailey was a little more offensive-minded. I considered Steve. He's got plenty of size. He gives a Twin Towers look to the Sonics should they want it between him and Danny Shays. Of course, they also have Kareem, whom they could bring back. The thing that, I don't want to say troubles me when I look at the Sonics, but if I were the Sonics, I would be troubled by, is the slow development of Danny Ainge. They drafted Dominique Wilkins last year with the number one overall pick, and while he didn't win Rookie of the Year, he did average 25-7. That's nothing to sneeze at. Ainge is now going into year three, and last season he only played 15 minutes a game and averaged 5 points a game, and that's after a rookie year where he only averaged 12 points a game. I don't know if that's due to him being benched in the hopes people will forget about him, or if that's due to him, genuinely not having the ability to go off in the way that perhaps was hoped when he was originally drafted. I think this season with the Sonics is the season where he's going to get enough burn so we can really tell what he is. Is he the 15 points a game, if given 40 minutes, scorer that his stats so far would suggest, or does he have more in him? It's kind of a season for Danny where he's going to need to prove himself. Stepanović, this year's rookie, is a little bit raw and a little bit underdeveloped for a big. He looks like he could eventually grow into a decent scorer and rebounder, but he's not going to be, at least I don't think, a defensive anchor. So he His ceiling to me looks like low grade starter, maybe fourth, fifth starter, high grade bench player. But right now, I think he's a bench player. I think it would behoove the Sonics to bring back Kareem and give Stepanovic a year to just kind of sit behind him and learn. So that takes us to the halfway point of the draft. I'm going to take a quick break, you know, as usual, get something to wet my whistle, and then we'll come back and we'll hit the back half of the draft.
I'm Donnie Dunghill, and this is my son, Donnie.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, anyways, we're the owners of the Dunghill Burial Emporium and Sons. Unfortunately, we have lost our lease, and now we must have special clearance sale, because they are kicking our ass out. Oh, well, easy come, easy go. But here's the good news. Go ahead, Donnie. Why don't you tell them our coffins have been chosen by more families than any other guys? Tell them that the name Dunghill has been synonymous with quality since 1940 and two.
You said it, Pop.
Yeah, and one other thing. With our clearance sale, everything must go. That means we're selling our finest mahogany caskets and concrete burial receptacles
for
dirt cheap. So anyways, if you need to bury a loved one, please do it before the end of the month with Dunghill Burial Emporium and Sons.
We bury the competition.
Yeah, you got it right, Donnie.
On the next episode of Road Kids.
Welcome to East Side Hospital, kids. Scrub up, grab a gown. Today, you're all going to be surgeons.
Surgeons?
Excellent.
Oh, my God.
No way.
Cool.
I'll confess, at first I was a little nervous. Being a roadie for Van Halen was one thing, but this was serious surgery.
The doctor asked if anybody had ever performed an angioplasty before.
I was like, wow, this is going to be really tough.
Okay, Kenny, you're going to need to make an incision right there, but be careful not to get the left ventricle.
Wait, you mean right here? Oh my God! Oh, gauze!
Surgery was definitely a challenge, but the doctors were very helpful, even after Kenny killed that guy.
Hey, the freaking camera guy bumped my arm!
You know, Kenny, you really need to take more responsibility.
I think, having to do surgery, we learned a lot about ourselves.
I can't wait for our next adventure.
Hey, look! What's that under a spleen?
It's our next clue. Hey, guys! We're going to be maximum security prison guards!
Catch it all on the next Road Kids.
Tonight, after The Real World, Trenton.
Okay, pick number 14 was Daryl Walker to the Pacers. Daryl Walker is a really good fit for what the Pacers have going on, or at least he will be in about 3 years once he catches up to his potentials. The Pacers are built around the Joe Barry Carroll, Adrian Dantley combo. Daryl Walker is another guy that gives them a really athletic player, super quick, can already defend pretty well. I think, really the only thing they're waiting for in Indiana is for his handles and passing to catch up. If I were Polly, I would probably dump some points into his currents in handles and passing just to accelerate that process, because you put him with Joe Barry Carroll and Adrian Dantley, and now you have a three-headed monster that's, super quick, really good on defense, puts a lot of pressure on you offensively. I really like this pick for the Pacers. I hate it if I'm the Pacers' opponents, but since I'm only going to be the Pacers' opponents on a regular basis, if we meet in the finals, I'm all for it. So Walker, I think, he strikes me as a guy who could get a lot of playing time this season, maybe should get a lot of playing time this season. Again, I think it would be a wise idea to invest some in getting his handles and his passing up to snuff quickly, but he just, he fits right in with what the Pacers have been doing. I love this pick from Polly. Polly has been knocking it out of the park, at least as far as I'm concerned with his drafting. I know he's had kind of a down couple years. I think, and I'll call this shot now, I think the Pacers kind of bounce back. I don't know if they're going to be able to challenge the Bucks, because the Bucks are just so good top to bottom, but I definitely think they are looking at a strong number two finish in the division. this season if they can't catch the Bucks. So I think the Pacers are back, at least based on that pick. If you can't tell, really, really like the idea of Walker on the Pacers. With the 15th pick, the Spurs added to their stable of young talent with Mark West. He joins Byron Scott, whom we talked about earlier. West is not going to win Rookie of the Year. What West is going to do is he is going to be a solid, if unspectacular, rebounder and shot blocker. And if you put some points into him, he could probably become a really good post defender as well. Yeah, one training there, at least a potential training. Let me see. I look at his potential off the top of my head. Yeah, he's got a B potential in post defense, so maybe you want to be careful about that. But yeah, if you throw points into his current post defense, he can definitely, you know, shoot him up there and make him into a defensive presence. He's not going to score, but you don't need him to score. And in some ways, it's kind of good. You can, I don't want to say inflate your scoring stats, but you know, if you have one position that is all defense, your other scores can usually make up for that. You don't want four positions that are all defense and no offense, because one score is not going to be able to make up for it. But generally, if you have three or four scorers, they can pick up the slack for a guy that focuses on the defensive end. I think West is kind of a counterpoint to the scoring of Aguirre, Johnson, Scott, Thomas. Nice pickup for the Spurs. Because the West is so deep, I don't know that it gets them back into the running right away, but it's just another piece that goes right into their core, and you can see the Spurs just doing a slow build, ready to come back and terrorize the league when all of their players grow into themselves. And that pick probably disappointed the Lakers, who picked 16th. They wound up going with Sidney Green, who is a listed as a small forward, but he's really a power forward, let's be honest here. Excuse me a moment. He does give them a rebounding stud, which I think they really probably like, next to James Donaldson, who's that himself. And that is important for them because their wings, Trapuka, Free, Davis, are not good on the glass, so all the help they can get there is probably needed. Much like West, they don't really need Green to be a scorer, which is good because he isn't. The one concern I would have about Green is his individual defense is not great. Yes, he will do a good job collecting rebounds, but that's about all he's going to be great for. He doesn't project, at least to me, to be a super efficient player. He's going to have a lot of turnovers, may even struggle a little bit with fouls. So again, it's a fit for the Lakers, and I think they can make it work, but I don't think it's a great fit. You know, we've been saying it on the pod for seasons now. The Lakers are looking for a star power forward. Sidney Green is a decent backup power forward, or he's a good rebounder if that's all you want, but he doesn't do all the things you want a power forward to do, particularly defend in the post and block shots. And again, I have concerns about his efficiency and his turnovers. So I think the Lakers are going to wind up a little bit disappointed in Green, and they're going to keep looking for another season to get that power forward in there. The Cavaliers picked at 17. The Cavaliers had a nice season last season, getting into the playoffs. They bring back most of their squad. I guess they're looking to go Paxson and Paxson. They've got Jim Paxson as a free agent. They picked up John Paxson. It's a team that's really leaning into their, I don't want to say guard identity, but really leaning into a quality backcourt. And I worry that that's a little bit at the expense of their front court. The thing is, there weren't really any good bigs left. I mean, the closest thing to a big was Sidney Green, and that was taken by the Lakers ahead of them. So the Cavaliers may just be making lemons out of lemonade. What Paxson does give them is yet another good ball handler. If I'm the Cavaliers, I might consider something like a full court press, three or four guard defense. You know, just put Clement Johnson in the middle, run a bunch of little guys around him, and just try to harass your opponent into 100 turnovers and see if you can run and gun that way. Will it work? I don't know, But with their personnel, they certainly may as well try it. I think it would be an interesting zig when everybody else is zagging. Or a zag when everybody else is zigging. Yeah. Anyway. Next up was the Suns. With pick number 18, they got Mitchell Wiggins. This one scares me a little bit. Mitchell Wiggins, at least in my estimation, maybe doesn't have the offensive chops of Ralph Sampson, but otherwise looked like an amazingly well-polished guy. Doesn't seem to shoot a lot of threes. Excellent jump shooter. Excellent, well, good inside. Hits the offensive glass. Can defend on the perimeter. Gets steals. And he'll be benefiting by playing next to Magic Johnson, who's going to feed him a bunch of easy shots. I think Wiggins, to me, is the dark horse candidate for Rookie of the Year. He could sneakily average, and again, a lot, you know, on his own, I think he averages maybe, you know, 14 points a game. But I think Magic could push that average up near 20. And if he crashes the glass and gets a ton of steals, maybe he gets into the Rookie of the Year conversation. But I think he's going to be surprisingly productive for where he was picked. And I think there is going to be a couple of teams that bypass him. They're going to be kind of kicking themselves and go, man, we should have gotten that guy. At pick 19, the Bucks grabbed Rodney McRae. He's a guy. You know, nothing really stands out about him. You know, has nice stamina, doesn't commit personal fouls, but there's no attribute that you look at and you go, oh my gosh, this guy's amazing. So he's just a body. He's not going to get very many minutes behind Mikhail and Tyler. So does he even stick to the rotation? Is he somebody that Quayle tries to pawn off? I don't know. I don't see where he fits in. He's definitely not getting any Rookie of the Year burn. He's not a bad pick, or he's just not a great pick either. He's just a guy. So, yeah, pick 19, you want a rotation piece. I guess he's probably a late rotation piece. Pick number 20 was the Kings, your reigning champions, who now have a very expensive offseason ahead of them. We'll get to that a little bit when we talk about free agency. When the pick was made, Darth said, this is your starting point guard. He's not going to be your starting point guard. Let's not get crazy here. He looks like he could be a good floor general, ball control guy. Not a great defender, but not an awful one in about three seasons. Right now, he's probably going to have his butt parked on the bench, and we're not going to see much of Sundvold. This is a grade that you really won't be able to give Darth until about three seasons from now when you see what he turns into. I'll just say if Sundvold winds up starting the majority of the games for the Kings, it means the Kings are in trouble. At 21, we had the Bullets. They went ahead and grabbed Fred Roberts. I do like Fred Roberts kind of as a sleeper pick. He's got some interesting skill sets for a big guy. I've mentioned before, I like guys that have skill sets that are a little bit odd. And Roberts has a little bit of an odd skill set. And I think he's probably near, except for his inside rating, he's probably near his potential in most everything. So he's about as ready to play as he's going to be. Has decent size, decent athleticism. I don't think he's a starter, but I think he's certainly a quality bench player. And, the Bullets, I think, giving some depth behind Buck Williams, you could have done worse than Roberts. All of the really, I don't want to say good bigs, but all of the really attractive bigs had already come off the board. So it's a value pick. It's probably a hope that Roberts can pop off in training camp. If he does, the Bullets will look like geniuses. If not, they'll look a little bit foolish. Maybe not foolish. I don't think Roberts is going to be a drag. I just don't think he's ever going to be a star. How about that? At 22, the 76ers got auto-picked and simmed into Bob Hansen. Bob is just one of those guys that does a lot of stuff average. Looks like a 12-point-a-game scorer maybe at his peak. He's He'll probably stick around the league for a while, but he'll never be, he'll start on some bad teams. He'll come off the bench on good ones. It's just kind of a very non-excited pick. And then finally, with the final pick in the draft that was traded from the Warriors to the Bullets for points, basically, and the draft pick there by the Bullets was one Ennis Watley. Much like the Fred Roberts pick, Watley, I mean, he's fine. He's not super exciting. He's a point guard, defends a little above average, quick. But again, if Watley is playing a lot of minutes, the Bullets are in trouble. The Bullets were one of the best teams in the league last year. They shouldn't be playing the 23rd pick in the draft. So that, is at least to me the end of the interesting stuff. I guess there was one late trade wherein the Bulls and Pistons made a swap where Marcus Johnson went to the Bulls and the Bulls sent the Jazz 84 first to the Pistons. Again, I think the Bulls are loading up to try to make a run this season. Are they the favorites over the Bullets and the Bucks? Probably not. Can they make the playoffs? I think they can. Again, it's the Celtics squad plus a couple of guys. So I think Logan has pivoted nicely. I think the Bulls will, I still think the Pacers are going to outdo them, but I think the Bulls will be a strong playoff contender. There's not going to be any doubt. I'm going to take another quick break, and then we're going to take a fast trip, very fast trip, where I'm not going to get into too much detail through free agency. Okay, we are back. We're going to take a look now at free agency. And free agency to me is very interesting this year. And the reason I say that is if you look at the cap and you do the math, a max slot for 25%, which some of these guys are eligible for 30 or 35, but a 25% max is $918,000. So just shy of $1 million. As you get into the 30 and 35% max as that climbs closer to $1 million starting salary. Go back and take a look at teams' cap space. And if you cut that out, you find that there are potentially 47 maximum contracts that could be handed out. So if everybody hands out nothing but maxes, 47 dudes could get the max. There are 35 purple and blue potential players out there. Not only that, but there are a few teams that I'm going to call the Hunters that don't have anybody that they need to bring back that have a lot of maxes available. The Spurs have enough cap space for 3 max contracts. They don't have anybody blue or purple to bring back. The Hawks have 3 available max slots. Now, they do have some guys they probably want to bring back, but they've got the 3 slots. The Mavericks have 3 slots, have 1 guy they might want to bring back. The Sonics have 3 slots. I think they have 1, maybe 2 guys they want to bring back, but still, that's 3 slots. The Rockets have 3 slots, although they have quite a few guys that I think they've got 7 guys in the free agent class I think they need to look at bringing back. The Celtics have 2 maxes, nobody they need to bring back. The Bulls have 2 max slots. Well, probably less now. This was I checked this before they picked up the trade in which they got Marcus Johnson. So the Bulls probably have 1 max at this point. The Nuggets have 1 max, and teams that are what I would call the hunted, where they have more guys that I think that they need to pay than they have salary slots for. Number 1 on the list, sorry Darth, it's the Kings. They have 3 mega star players that they need to bring back. They have 2 maxes. At least to stay under the cap. Again, I should clarify, the soft cap allows you to go over the cap to give maxes out. So Darth is not going to have to pick and choose. He can offer maxes to all three players, but what it means is it becomes very expensive very quickly, and it eats up his flexibility. The Nuggets have two max slots and three, maybe four guys that they're going to want to bring back. The Supersonics, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, other teams that have a lot of guys to bring back. The 76ers have three guys, maybe four, that they want to bring back. I don't know that any of them, maybe none of them, command maxes, but they're all really talented, and there's going to be probably some people throw maxes at them. The Suns have a couple of guys. The Warriors have a couple of guys. The Blazers have a couple of guys. This is the year that I think will be most interesting in unrestricted free agency, because there are a lot of quality players that are unrestricted. There are quite a few of them that are young, and there are way too many max slots available for you to try to go cheap on them. So just as last season I said you got to be careful about overpaying, this is the season where you have to be careful about underpaying, because there's so much money sloshing around and there are so many quality players. You know, last season I kind of mentioned we had, you know, four blue potential players, and most of those guys were fourth and fifth starters. This season you've got a lot of guys that are the lead scorer on a team, maybe the second scorer, lots of number twos, lots of number threes. The quality of player this time around is really, really good. There's a ton of money open, and there's no restricted free agency. If you get a guy, he's yours. So there's a lot of teams, I think, that are on the hunt. What that also means, though, is because there are way more max slots than there are players available, there are teams that are going to swing and whiff. And if you are a team that wants to tank again this season to get it, well, let's say optimize your draft position in the upcoming draft, maybe you're fine with that. If that's not you, that puts you in a little bit of a desperate place. And the other thing is, if you've got a couple of guys that you have to max, especially if you have a key player coming up for free agency next year, now your salary cap is getting a little bit tight. We've really not had to deal a lot with the salary cap to this point in the league, because the creation draft contracts are all relatively reasonable, the raises are small, and so everybody had plenty of cap space to work with. This season, I think that is likely to start going out the window. Next season, it's going to get worse. And so, this will be a very interesting season. This is a season where I think if you want to get a guy, this is probably the right season, if you're willing to max a guy out, to talk to the incumbent team and ask about a sign and trade, because they can throw the supermax in there. That's the fifth year. That's a huge consideration. The maximum raises are a little bit higher. The odds of you getting the player you want are just better. And I know everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to be able to use my cap space and get the guy I want. In general, my experience is when everybody lines up and everybody pays the max, and especially when you consider that the incumbent team is going to be able to offer a supermax, the supermaxes win. I think a lot of teams are looking over the free agent landscape and thinking, I am going to get a new star or two in here, and it's going to cost me nothing other than cap space. I will be shocked if more than two players that are of star caliber change teams over free agency. I'm going to call that now. I think, you know, there are some opportunities to snipe guys. Don't get me wrong. I think there will be some players, particularly older players, that you can probably sneak in and grab. But a guy who's, you know, say 25 years old, still has 4 or 5 years of his prime left, is almost certainly going to get a supermax. And so I'm not saying don't shoot your shot. Shoot your shot. Try to get the guys you want. But in the back of your mind, keep in mind that it is going to be very difficult to pry a guy away from a team that is absolutely dead set on keeping them. And I don't want to pick too much on anybody, but I'm going to pick on the defending champs because I know Darth can take it, and because I know everybody is looking at the defending champs. You know, they have three players that are absolutely amazing. You know, Bernard King and Calvin Natt are both 30-point a game scorers. Mike Gminski is a defensive player of the year candidate, is averaging 20 points a game. Everybody is going to offer those guys max deals. And Darth is going to supermax them, and they're all three almost certainly going back to the Kings. So don't think you're going to pick off the champ through free agency. It usually doesn't work that way. Also, I know Darth doesn't care about luxury tax. You know, I mentioned he only had two slots available, and he had to go over the cap if he signed a third. He's willing to do it, trust me. That's just, you know, who he is. He's a get my guys, you know, get the talent now and figure out the money later. And, you know, so the free agency this season is going to be very, very interesting. And I don't know that we got a good read on free agency last season because there just wasn't anything great there. And the season before, it was absolute garbage. So this is this may be the only season that a ton of guys are really available. A ton of desirable guys. In the future, there will be a lot of guys available, but they'll mostly be guys that are, you know, 30, 31, about to leave their prime, about to decay. And so it's going to be a little bit dangerous to throw a supermax at them. This season, you got a lot of young guys, and there's going to be, and they're not protected by RFA like rookies usually are. So this is the season, if you're going to snipe somebody, that you're going to get them. It's also the season, if you can't afford to lose somebody, don't skimp. You know, pay them what they're worth, or you're going to lose them. Because there's, like I said, there's a lot of money sloshing around out there, and if you don't max your star, somebody else will. Now, be careful not to max a guy who's not a star. And again, not picking on anyone in particular, but, you know what? I'm going to do it because I've talked about him before. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he averaged like, 24 points a game or something like that last season. I'm not looking at his player page, but, you know, just off the top of my head, I think it was 24 points a game. Let me pull him up. 23.7. Yeah, close enough. Let's call it 24. Kareem's amazing. You know, Kareem has been averaging, you know, 30, 24, 24. You know, been in the running for defensive player. He won defensive player of the year on the defensive team, and he's 36. You can throw a max at him, but we've already seen him declining over the last couple of years. It's just his peak was so high, he was at a good start. You might get some good production out of him for 1 or 2 years. If you give him 4 years, you're going to be sorry on year four. And again, that's not, you know, maybe you're willing to do that because you want the 1 or 2 years. That's fine too. Just, you know, recognize that you have to be very careful. And there are a couple other players out there that I think are fool's gold. And I think most of us, you know, have kind of figured out where some of the fool's gold is at this point. You know, guys who look good, but, you know, maybe due to a very low foul rating can't stay on the court. You know, or guys that, you know, have a nice three-point shooting skill, but since there's only, you know, 2 3-pointers a game taken, it really doesn't make much of a difference. So again, I do think there are going to be probably 5 guys that change teams this year that are going to make a significant impact on their new team. They're not going to be max players. They're not going to be stars. They're going to be a really, really good number three. And somebody's going to get them for maybe 70% of a max. And they're going to maximize them, and they're going to get you 7. So 5 of those guys. There's going to be 5 guys that get the max and don't deserve it and wind up dragging their teams down. There's going to be 5 bad contracts out there. There's also going to be several players that, you know, get paid a salary commensurate with what they can produce. They're not going to get overpaid. I do think there's going to be more overpays just due to the amount of money sloshing around, but I guarantee you some people are going to find value. They always do. So, do your homework. You have all weekend to go over the free agents. Look at fit. Remember how you're trying to build your team. Don't just look at superstars. And again, be prepared to negotiate. And that goes for teams that both have a player that is in free agency and want a player that's in free agency. Just because you strike out trying to get your guy immediately doesn't mean he's not available if you're willing to give something up. And one of the things that I've noticed is people have a hard time in this league with the idea of, I want something that isn't free or very near unto it. If you want quality, you usually have to pay for it. Occasionally, George Gervin goes for 10 points. That doesn't usually happen. Most of the time, I think it's the Danny Ainge syndrome, where Danny Ainge won his first trade as the Celtics GM when he dumped KG and Paul Pierce and got all of those Nets picks that turned into Tatum and Jaylen Brown and all that. And ever since then, he's tried to just absolutely win every single trade since and never got AD. Hasn't made a lot of trades with the Jazz. He's so enamored with absolutely destroying in the deal, he's never willing to give up marginal pieces to get better. And I think it's a common thing in the NBA. Everybody says, oh, I'll just get this guy in free agency. And then usually you don't, because he usually signs with his own team for more money. It's the same thing in this league. Everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to be able to figure things out and I'm going to be able to bring someone in free agency. Some people can. Nobody can do it consistently. I don't know of anybody that consistently gets new free agents to come in. There are people that will always max their guys and always max their own players and keep their star players forever. That's easy to do, but getting other people's players for free is a very, very difficult thing to do, and I've never seen anybody that can do it every time over a consistent long-term basis. You'll see people that can maybe get one or two, or they get a guy who was undervalued and build him into something that people then want. But nobody is going out and signing purple potential players away from other teams year over year over year. It just doesn't happen. So, just trying to temper expectations with free agency. I think everybody is looking to free agency and excited, thinking, oh, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get this. And you're just setting yourself up for a lot of disappointment. Again, this is more a warning, public service announcement, whatever it is. Do participate. Do go after the guys you want. Be prepared to be pleasantly surprised when, oh, that guy took that deal. But also, don't get salty if you see, I offered five guys the max and they all signed with their old team for the max, but I'm better. So this goes into one last thing. There are three different attributes that players have that I think go into free agency. They're kind of hidden. I know if you ask for a player card, you can see them, but I have never found a consistent rhyme or reason as to why players sign with one team over another that doesn't boil down to money. Generally, the team that offers the biggest contract wins. Occasionally you see something where a guy will not want to commit to a long-term max deal to sign a short-term max deal because he thinks he's just going to be able to reset, especially if he's looking at going from the 6 years of experience to 7 or 8 years of experience, so he's getting that 5% bump in pay. I see that occasionally, but in general, you're going to lose on money. It's not going to be because your team is a winner, or because you have better coaching, or because you're going to give him playing time, or because he likes your squad. You gave him money. These guys are very money grubby, which maybe is the way it should be. If you look at the NBA, take out Jalen Brunson. Who's the last guy you can see that was eligible for a max and didn't sign a max? Certainly not LeBron. Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up on that. good luck to everybody in free agency. We'll probably be back after the preseason with a preseason preview. This is the season of salt. And so, again, don't get your hopes up. Don't be too mad if you lose a guy. Don't be too bad if you don't get a guy. The first four seasons of the league are kind of, they're almost like the prelude to the real league. I mean, yes, the championships count the same, but we're not fully into the operating model. We don't have restricted free agency. We don't have owner-negotiated contracts. It takes a while to get there. This free agency is going to be different. Next free agency is going to be different. It's going to be a very small class, and it's going to be only the most elite players. What you have seen so far is nothing like regular free agency. Once we get into the 1985 offseason, we'll see regular free agency. So enjoy this for what it is. It's a one-time thing where everybody's got money, and everybody's got stars in their eyes, and everybody thinks they're going to get a superstar. Just, you know, don't be upset if a superstar doesn't come your way. And I'll probably have to tell myself that at some point too. Anyway, we'll talk to everybody in a week. This is the Cats signing off.